Hey folks, want to talk a little bit about our sponsor for the coaching staff. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. Had to bring my car in just last week, and Juan Carlos and everybody there took great care of me. They've got some great deals for you folks here, and you're going to want to listen carefully to this. If you're in the Omaha area and you need an oil change, you need to go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha. If you go there on Wednesday, it's only $15 for the labor on your oil change. You need to mention a pen and a napkin, but it's only $15 on Wednesdays for the labor for your oil changes. If you need a new set of tires, go to Ruiz Auto. And it is, if you get a set of four tires, they'll take $75 off if you mention a pen and a napkin. And finally, all American used cars and trucks, 144th and I-80 there. If you say a pen and a napkin 2025, if you mention a pen and a napkin 2025, it is $300 off of any used car or truck out at all American used cars and trucks. So if you are in the need of an oil change, if you are in need of a new set of tires, if you are in the need of a nice new to you automobile, you need to go check out Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. Again, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha, or All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80 here in Omaha. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. On try number five, I am back with my good friend, Mr. Tony D. Viss. He is out in the Cedar Valley. And Mr. Viss, how are things going for you today?
Going well, Marty. A little chilly today, but it's the wife's birthday, so we had our kids and grandkids and spent some quality time together playing some pickleball and eating some good food together and just being around each other, enjoying each other's company. And then, as you know, that doesn't always happen when you get to adult children stage. But yeah, doing well. How about you?
Well, before we go any further, Tony, from a pen and a napkin to the most patient wife of my co-host.
Anybody in the audience who's got a birthday today, happy birthday to you.
Just wanted to wish Rita a happy birthday from all of us here at A Pen and a Napkin to Rita Viss.
I'm sure she'll appreciate that. Yeah. And like you said, very, very patient because she's had to put up a lot over the last 3+ decades.
Yes, she has. I'm not even going to fight that. I'm not even going to deny that that is the truth. But Carla Plum has done the same as well. So, great stuff here. No, we're doing good here in Omaha. It's cold. It's crappy. It's early spring in Nebraska. So, I got some lawn stuff today. So that's really exciting as well. So, but we are here for episode number 125. In a little bit, we're going to talk about assembling a coaching staff. But before we get to that, Mr. Viss, of course, we want to thank our coaching staff sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. And Tony, I thought we would have more number 25s, And like some of them we've used, like Barry Bonds was 24 last week, but he also wore 25, so didn't lump that one in there. But I got a couple here. Richard Sherman, the defensive back. Fred Biletnikoff, Mr. Stickum, wide receiver for, I still believe, the Oakland Raiders. And I did not do steroids. And then 4 months later, I got suspended for steroids. Mr. Rafael Palmeiro also wore number 25. I've got three basketball players, Tony, all retired. Two point guards and a face-up four. Let's see here. It's going to be tough. How about this one? Face Up 4 has, I believe, 7 championship rings.
Okay. Robert Horry.
Robert Horry is correct. One point guard, left-handed point guard on John Wooden's first national championship team. Walt Hazard's running mate.
Man, I was lucky to get Walt Hazard. I don't think I'm
his trade to the New Orleans Jazz led to the Lakers getting Magic Johnson like 3 years later.
Gail Goodrich.
Gail Goodrich is correct. And yeah, it is correct. And the third one here, Reed Shepard, was greatly compared to this point guard out of Georgia Tech in the mid-80s. It would be Mark Price.
Yes.
You are correct. Oh, he was awesome. Underrated. Underrated.
Very underrated.
In the annals of the game. So,
Georgia Tech had a run on point guards there for a while with him, Kenny Anderson. It was like point guard you there.
Stephon Marbury.
Yeah.
The win down there.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Marbury wasn't bad.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. He's coming back with his $15 shoes. I thought I saw that somewhere. I could be wrong, but I'm
ready.
Yeah, I think I'm right. So, and I am loyal to Starberries. Probably be rocking a pair here in a few months. And when assembling a coaching staff, segue, you know, that's kind of one of the things here that you're going to be all about, you know. So one of the themes that I've been working on through the opening tip newsletter, shameless plug, is interviewing. And we're going to talk about this week. Okay, what do you do when you get the job? And one of the things that should be at the top of your list, Tony, is assembling your coaching staff. And you and I have had to assemble multiple coaching staffs. Now, you've had more head coaching stops than I have, so you've had to put together staffs more often than me. But I think that some of the biggest decisions that you're going to make early, not only early on in your regime as a head coach, but throughout your tenure as a head coach, is your coaching staff. And in many ways, coaching staff can make or break your program.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that we sometimes undervalue is the quality of human beings that we select to be on our staff. And to be honest with you, I think there's a part of me that thinks that's more important than like the X and O and the expertise and stuff like that. Because the fact that when you take a look at people that you put around your kids, you want people that are going to treat them well and, you know, believe in them and invest in them and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, you want people who know the game. But I think if you get people who are somewhat competent and want to learn, you can teach them the game. But the character side of it, you either have it or you don't.
Yeah, I think character is, and it depends on your list of priorities. I think if you brought 50 different coaches into the room and you ask them what your top three priorities, but you have to list them one, two, or three, or, you know, top five priorities, I think there's about five things that would be pretty consistently on those lists, that bullet point of five things, but people are going to have them in different order. And I really like what you said there, Tony, about the kids feeling comfortable and just having decent human beings with you on the staff. There's nothing more frustrating than you know, having somebody on your staff that is I don't even want to say not a good person, but you're just not comfortable with. I think one of the things kind of splintering off of that a little bit is their personality, and can I hang with you? You know, we're going to spend a lot of time together. When I'm stuck on a yellow bus with you for an hour or an hour and a half because we've got a road trip, am I comfortable with you? Like you said, am I comfortable with you being around the players? Do our personalities mesh in such a way that this is going to be a positive experience for everybody? And I really think that's extremely important, as are three or four other things. But it's hard, Tony, when you have somebody on staff that you personally just have a hard time being with. And I'm guessing you've probably been there.
Those things where, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, like you don't have to sing kumbaya and get along perfectly yeah. with each other. But it's one of those things where, you know, like you said, you're going to spend a lot of time with each other and you want them to be able to, you know, have great relationships with your kids. Because I think a lot of times, like with the head coach, you've got to keep a level of separation, if you will, because you don't want it to ever be, well, coach is only playing Johnny or Susie or whoever because coach likes them better than me. And so you got to keep a little bit of distance. And those assistant coaches, you know, it's kind of designed that they have a little bit better, I don't say it, they have a little bit better idea of what's going on. Like they've got their finger on the pulse of the team. I think let's go with that. They got their finger on the pulse of the team and they can come to you and, hey, you know, maybe not necessarily betray trust or anything like that, but, you know, so-and-so has got something going on in their life right now. Just want to give you a heads up on that, you know, so that you have an idea, you know, when you interact with them, this might not be the best week to you know, blow your top with them, so to speak, or, you know, hey, so-and-so's kind of wondering what their role is. And that would be a great time to, you know, kind of have that conversation again and explain roles a little bit further. But I think the assistant coach can have that type of closer relationship that maybe the head coach has to be a little bit, steer a little bit clearer of from time to time.
I'm going to throw a word out here, Tony. Tell me what you think of this word as it fits into that role. A good assistant coach is a great interpreter. They can interpret what the coach is saying to the kids and what the kids feel like they need to say to the head coach.
Would 100% agree with that. Interpreter is a great, great thing because, like I said earlier, you don't want to betray the trust because as a coach, the assistant coach, you can have a little bit closer relationship on some of those things. And you have to make sure that you don't ever betray that. Otherwise, they'll stop coming to you. And they need to have that sounding board, if you will. Mm-hmm. And just one of those things where, you know, you want to make sure that you are able to build that bridge because you are the bridge in between the players and the head coach. And you can help to alleviate some of those stresses and concerns and kind of help them navigate through choppy waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another big thing that I had, Tony, and I think this would be at the top of most head coaches' lists when they're talking about staff members or people that they're going to hire, and that's loyalty. You know, are you going to have my back? Are you going to have my six? Are you going to have my back in the foxhole? And, you know, so I think loyalty is way up there. I know it was for me when I was hiring coaches. I would take somewhat, and a lot of these qualities that we're talking about, and I'm sure we're going to get to X's and O's here, but I, especially as I became more seasoned and experienced, I felt like I could teach X's and O's, but sometimes it's harder to teach loyalty and cooperation and having a pleasant personality. You know, again, kind of going back to that personality thing, it's hard to have somebody who's always got something to complain about with the team or one of the, you know, they're complaining about the kids and they're not doing this and they're not doing that. And that throws a monkey wrench into it. But if they're loyal, you can, to a degree, look past a couple of other things that might kind of grate on you a little bit. But you know if they've got your back with the kids, with the parents, with other coaches, you are in a good place with that coach.
Yes. You know, you want to have, you know, you want to have guys and gals on your staff, like you said, who you've got each other's back. You know, and it's very, very important to have people in there that are loyal to you. And I think loyalty is one of the most underrated and underappreciated characteristics. But, you know, because as an assistant coach, you can go out and you can join in with that group that kind of rakes the head coach over the coals. And they don't want that, you know. That does nobody any good. It doesn't do them any good. I mean, it's one of those things, if they're a part of the group that's taking the head coach down, do you really want them to be the next leader of that program? I wouldn't think so. And so you have to be careful with who you hop in the foxhole with.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Tony, what else you got, buddy?
You know, I think one of the things you also have to understand, and this isn't like being contradictory of what you said, but you don't want yes people on your staff. You know, I had a guy here that I went after heavily to be my assistant coach, and I'm like, I know what I think. I want to know what other people think. I want to know other ideas and things out there. I'm not, you know, arrogant enough to think that I know everything about this game. And if there is a different way to do it, a better way to do it, then I'm really, really open to that. And so I think that's also something that you want on there, is somebody who thinks differently. And it's not just somebody. I think it's some buddies who think differently than you do, so that you can learn the game and continue to grow as a coach and grow in your knowledge of the game. And so you don't want yes people on your staff, so that you can have the opportunity to grow as a coach. And so that's something else that I would also investigate and put some time in, and look to hire people who think differently than I do, as far as like X and O. I think there are certain things X and O wise, and I know there are certain things in terms of treatment of people that are non-negotiables with me. But there are things in there that I want to explore, like different ways to play the game, different offenses, different defensive philosophies, and different things like that. And so I'm all the time looking for people who think differently than I do, so that I can see a different perspective.
I had I think one of the best things that you can do if you, especially if you are a younger head coach, is to try and find an assistant coach that is much older than you, that has been through the battles, you know, and one of the smartest moves that I ever did as a head coach was I ended up hiring a guy named Jeff Ritz to be my assistant coach. I think Jeff was my assistant for 8 years and was, and I mean, we were, when it came to basketball philosophy, Tony, it was oil and water, you know, especially on the defensive end. I was, you know, if we want to press, we want to attack, we want to force tempo, we want the game in the mid to upper 50s. That'd be perfect if we could do that, you know, type of thing. And Jeff was all about the Jim Boeheim 2-3 zone and getting back. And, I mean, do you think there were some, a little bit of, you know, in a very positive way, did we bump some heads a little bit? Yeah, you know, I remember when I hired him, I gave him some of our films, and after a couple of weeks, I'm like, well, what do you think? He's, well, this is different, you know, but I'll adapt, you know, and you know, but he always had great suggestions, and the best thing was he was never a yes man, and neither, you know, I don't really recall, I think I had one assistant coach that was a real yes man, but pretty much everybody else that worked for me, if they felt like they should challenge me on something, they did, and I embraced that. Doesn't mean I always agreed with what they said, but I don't think they were ever afraid to bring stuff up with me. And, you know, Jeff did that, Sarah Goodwin, you know, Ginger Duro, Chris Eastman, you know, some of the people I had at Fort Collins, you know, just did a, you know, great job with that type of stuff. So I love that, Tony, when you're talking about that, you know, the no yes men. So, I think kind of feeding off of that, Tony, I think one of the things that I want to talk about, and again, especially at the high school level, this is hard to do in some situations because you just got to kind of take what you can get. But does your, how many different roles can you fit with your coaching staff? And can they work as a team together? You know, can, are we being redundant? Do I have three really young guys or gals and they're all enthusiastic and they want to do this and this and this, but they don't want to do this and this that I need done? And so how do I do that? You know, do your staff members skill sets complement each other? I could go back to when I worked for Mike Power up at Briar Cliff, and Mike was the spearhead of kind of the whole program and the organizer, and you know, he had the X's and O's knowledge, and then Jamie Sale was you know, he was just so good working with players and working with their shot and fundamentals and put in so much time. And I was kind of the tape nerd. I was the scouting guy and did all the scouting reports and other stuff. And we crossed over in other ways, you know, but those were kind of our 3 yards, and it fit so well. And we just complemented each other very, very well. And that's, I realize that's hard to find, but can you get your coaching staff to complement each other, to work as a team and balance their strengths and off of each other, play to your strengths and minimize your weaknesses, which is the same thing that we ask our kids to do. So I think that's something that you look at, if at all possible. And again, I know not everybody's in that situation, but I think that's something that, if possible, that's important as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like a puzzle, if you will. And if you get all of the same piece, you're not going to be able to put that puzzle together. But if you can get those pieces that fit really, really well, you know, and then fills in, because you're never going to find any basketball coach, no matter how good they are, that is an expert in everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I kind of look at a little bit of the staff, kind of like piecing together a football staff, if you will. And what I'm talking about there, you have your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, like you mentioned with Coach Powers, as the head coach, kind of the visionary, if you will, knowing where he needs to get in the process that it needs to get there. But you have to have those people that are in the weeds, so to speak, that are there in that day-to-day thing, helping them. And You know, Marty, one of the things that you mentioned with Jamie, with being one of those with working with their shot and stuff like that, that's a big deal. I mean, you take a look at you know, basketball today, that's one of the big things every single staff seems to have is that shooting guru, that skills coach, and different things there. And, you know, then you take a look at some of the more successful head coaches, they started off in the video department. Mm-hmm. You know, they're somebody that knows that. And so, you know, I just think it's super important. And, you know, who doesn't do post-perimeter work all the time in practice? And you want people who are competent in that area. But yes, there are so many skills, so many different nuances in basketball. And you have to have, you know, all those responsibilities delineated out. And if you don't have people who kind of fit and can mix and match on that thing, it becomes very, very challenging.
Yeah. And it's like you said, I think it's a puzzle. It's hiring a staff. And, you know, I know, like, when I was at Scott, you know, Sarah Goodwin was really, really good with working with the players, and she was willing to put that time in. And that, I'm not bad at it by any means, but married, have kids, my kids are really busy. It's hard to find a lot of time to do that. So that was, you know, that was a balancing thing that we could do there, and it helped make the players as good as they could be. So, what else you got, my friend?
You know, some other things to kind of take a look at with it as well is, I think a thing that has to happen, you know, you have to have somebody who's good at communication skills. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully your head coach excels in that. You know, as far as like the vision and, you know, communicating where you're going and stuff like that. Like, it doesn't mean that the other coaches don't have good communication skills, because if you are their position coach, so to speak, when they come out of the game, you've got to be able to communicate with them. And then when you're time out with your head coach and you're seeing something, you have to be able to communicate that clearly to them as well. And so I think communication skills are something that is very, very underrated. And don't get me wrong, I think it can vary at the different level that you're at, but everybody needs to have those communication skills. Some, maybe it's a little bit more important than others, but communication has to be something that's a high priority on your.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your players, you know, they, and kind of going back to that word that we used earlier, Tony, interpreter. You know, this is what I need to say to you right now. And sometimes, most of the time, especially when you're an assistant coach, it's the pick me up. Hey, you got this. You're going to be okay. Do this, do that. All's good. Let's keep grinding away here. But then every once in a while, you know, you gotta lay a little bit of a hammer. Not very often. More often than not, the assistant coach is the good cop, and the head coach has to be the bad cop. But that communication, knowing what to say and how to say it. And not only that, Tony, especially like when you get into game day, saying it efficiently, you know, having that knowledge of, okay, I've got your attention right now for about 20 seconds. You just came out of the game. You're a little bit frustrated. Boom, boom, boom. All right. Deep breath. Now let's recover. Let's move on. You know, because assistant coach is still helping coach the game as well, and watching the floor and different things like that. So, communication, huge part of it. So, I really think it's important that you have assistant coaches that have a high level of work ethic, Tony. Find people who can really, who are willing to bust their butt, who are willing to put in their time. And most people are. They volunteer, so to speak, for the job. They throw their hat in the ring for not a lot of money, and they're all in. They're all in usually. So take advantage of that. But you've got to let them know, hey, this is not going to be you show up at 3:25 for a 3:30 practice, and this is the first that we've talked about it, and at 5:30 you're out the door after practice is over at 5:25 or whatever it may be. I mean, there's going to be long days, long nights. I'm going to have expectations of you. I know I'm not paying you a lot of money, but you've got to have a work ethic that you have got to be ready to get after this. And I think that is a high level thing that I looked for. You know, I hired an assistant coach one time. His name was Adam Ronfelt. Great guy. One of the things that stuck out to me, he was a younger coach. He was only about 22 or 23 when I hired him. But you want to know what stuck out to me the most on his resume, Tony? He was an Eagle Scout. And I knew how hard you had to work to be an Eagle Scout. And I was like, I'm going to give this kid a shot. I'm at least going to bring him in and talk to him. And because I recognized that right there as that kid, he's got some work ethic to him, because you just can't fake your way to an Eagle Scout. And so that was always a big one for me as well.
Yeah, I think work ethic is huge, because like you said, it's not a 2-hour gig. I mean, if you're going to be good at it, it takes what it takes. I'll just leave it at that. I know Nick Saban has said that before, but and I'm obviously no Nick Saban, but it takes what it takes if you want to be good at it. But the other thing I would throw at you as well is that when they do have that work ethic that you're looking for, make sure you let them know how much you appreciate it. Because I think a lot of times people don't switch a ton, I'm getting paid peanuts. People switch when they don't feel appreciated. And if you as the head coach really appreciate what they're doing, you got to let them know that. And I think if they feel appreciated, no matter what they're getting paid, your chances of retaining them and keeping them go up tremendously if they know that you really appreciate what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Tony, I've got 2 or 3 more things. How many more you got?
Yeah, about the same boat there. One of the things I would also throw out there that I think you have to look for a little bit as well is, as the head coach, you're kind of in that day-to-day thing. Like, you know, you may plan it out a week in advance or whatever the case may be, and you're going to scout, don't get me wrong, but when you're in the middle of it all the time, you know, you're in the middle of the forest, you can't really even see the trees. One of the things I think helps too is if you have somebody in your staff who likes to watch film and is good at scouts, mm-hmm. and so they kind of know what you're getting ready for. If you and them can get together and figure, oh yeah, I saw this, I didn't quite know what they were doing here, do you have that figured out? If you have somebody that can help you with that scout, I think that is huge. Get the calls down, you know, what are their 3 to 5 main sets that they run, out of bounds plays, defensively, what do they like to do? Are they man? Are they zone? Are they front in the post? Are they playing behind? They're going to run a double team from the weak side, you know, and if you can go in having those things down, I think that is a tremendous thing for you. And if you can get somebody that help you out with that, because a lot of times I think head coaches kind of feel like they're flying solo on those endeavors, but if you can get somebody that will help you out with the scouts, that can kind of navigate that with you, I think that's big. I think that's one of the things on our staff. John's really good at it, but Jeff Rubis, who's his lead assistant, Jeff is really, really good at that stuff too. And those two together can break down opponents pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one thing as a head coach I had a hard time letting go, was just those. And I think we did better. I started delegating some of that more for like second opinions. So like what we did last year, or my last season, was I had 3 assistant coaches. We had approximately 20 opponents altogether, or 20 potential opponents. And so, you know, I was scouting everybody, but, you know, my son Michael had a third of the teams, my assistant Chris had a third of the teams, my assistant Ginger had a third of the teams, and we would collaborate. And so I didn't, you know, sometimes I would feel like, okay, if I watch 3 films, for whatever reason, let's say I can only get to 3 films, but I know they're watching 3 or 4 films on this team as well, that's as good as me watching 5 or 6, you know, type of a thing. And then you can kind of collaborate on that. And that helped with my, you know, work-life balance, you know, type of a thing. Yeah. So I like that there, Tony. And I think with that, I'm going to link that into one of my final bullet points here. Do your assistant coaches have a willingness to learn? And one of the fastest ways to learn about the game, and as you get into the intricacies of the game, is watching film. And so if you're helping with scouting, to me, that's somebody that is someone who has a high level of interest in learning how to do this game better. You're going to see a lot of different varieties of styles at most levels. You're going to see a lot of different things, X's and O's wise, sets, out of bounds plays, defensive jumps, ATOs, all of those different things. And I think that trying to find assistant coaches that aren't just going to say, I'm going to work with post players. I don't scout. I don't do this. I will do this and take it or leave it. That can be kind of that can be really, really difficult. I think you have to be a lifelong learner, and you have to have that willingness to learn and kind of tying, like I said, what you talked about there with the scouting, that's a great indication of those that really have a willingness to learn.
Yeah. And it kind of goes with where I'm going next. You know, Marty, one of the things that you talk about with you and I is we're not, you know, wet behind the ears. We are seasoned and experienced. And one of the things that you've seen the game, and I'm talking pretty much all games, go toward is more of the analytics side of things. And so when you take a look at analytics and technology, analytics, I feel comfortable with, to be honest with you, the whole technology piece, I'm swimming upstream on that one. And so if you can get an assistant coach who's good with that, whether it's Huddle or Synergy or whatever other program you have out there that can help you with editing clips and doing things like that, that is huge, because that's the audience that you are now speaking to. Are kids who grew up with iPads and, you know, smartphones and whatever. And so that's the group. And if you can kind of help speak the same language to them, that really helps as you're trying to show them clips of how you want it or the upcoming opponent or what they're doing or whatever the case may be. I think that's something else that can be a really good fit as well.
Tony, when that part of the interview came up, when you got on John's staff, did you play this song in the background?
Why do you love me? Why do you need me? Always and forever. We met in a chat room. Now our love can fade blue.
Here, I screwed up the edit. Sorry.
But you make me self-evade. Yes, I love technology.
There it is.
But not as much as you see.
Little Kip Dynamite for you there, buddy. So
thank you. Thank you. I am so bad with technology, and it's funny because I never thought I would have a Google Classroom and teach out of that side of things. And, you know, Huddle wise, I'm pretty limited in what I can do there. But no, technology and I are just not really good friends.
Yeah. I think that comes with another, you know, my second to last bullet point here, which is trust. You know, can I trust, you know, I hired Billy, who's a 25-year-old, you know, little wet behind the ears still, but man, he could cut up those films that I'm just not comfortable with, or he can run that iPad that I'm not comfortable with, or whatever that means. I mean, we're using technology. I love technology.
It's a good club.
I'll never forget when that movie came out and my students were like, you got to watch this. So I'm like, okay. So, you know, again, dating myself here, we went to Blockbuster or something and we rented it. I think it was on DVD. I think we were actually at that point. But we watched it. We were like, this is the stupidest movie ever. We watched the first time. We're like, we only laughed like three or four times. We're like, this is so dumb. But the kids kept walking around the school and they kept quoting it and kept quoting it. So I'm like, let's watch, you know, and it popped up again. Like, oh, okay, I kind of get that, you know. And then the third time you're like, okay, it's pretty funny. But by the fifth time, you know, but then you saw it so many times that it wasn't funny anymore. But like over the last two or three weeks, I've seen more and more clips of it on social media. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot how stupidly funny that movie was. So, trust me on that, folks. Sorry. I didn't have a Napoleon Dynamite on the bingo card here tonight, Tony, but that's where we go on the coaching staff sometimes. But no, trusting that you're gonna that if you assign something, if you say, hey, I need you to go scout the Prairie Xavier game Thursday night because I've got to go to my kids' swim meet or something like that, and bring me back a good report. You've got to be able to trust your assistant coaches that they're going to do that. Or, and it's not just tasks, it's everything within the job. And, so I really think that trust that, and that kind of ties into loyalty, but I think that trust also has to deal with just being responsible, I guess would be another thing too, Tony, being responsible. And you're gonna, if I tell you to be at practice at 3 o'clock when we start at 3:30, you're going to be there. So we can talk about what we're going to do and kind of walk through some things in the gym before we get going. And you've got 10 or 15 minutes to make positive relationships with the players, you know, just different things like that. I think that's really, really important to have.
I would agree. You know, trust is one of those things. Again, you know, when you're a part of a team, if you have it, it's just like that super glue, if you will, that adheres the team together. And so I would agree. And another one that I would go with that builds off of a little bit of what you were talking about earlier. We talked about having a staff. You had mentioned that, you know, Coach Power's role, Coach Sales' role, I'm sorry, your role. But the other thing too that you want to factor in there is personality styles. Because I think if you get a staff that has all the same personality,
yeah,
that's hard. And if you can get, you know, that guy that's the coach that maybe is intense, a coach that's maybe a little bit more motivating and encouraging type of thing, and you get a coach who may be a little bit more methodical and calm, I think that really helps kids.
Yeah.
Because some will gravitate to one style, others will gravitate to another, and then obviously you'll have some that'll go to that third style. And I think that leadership style and personality style is also something that goes into that, you know, hey, I work with Post, that's great, but how do you, what's your personality trait? I think that's something else that you want to factor in and have an assortment there.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny that you say that. Mike and I had a conversation a few months ago, and we were kind of talking about, you know, the good old days, and you know, he would say, you know, that was so much fun, because in so many ways, Jamie and I were completely opposite of Mike. You know, Mike was Mike, and it was good, but he needed a couple of idiots like Jamie and I to be around who could inject humor. But we also could say, Mike, don't be an idiot. That's stupid. You know, that's just dumb. And we had that give and take. You know, it just meshed really well together. And it was all, like you said, Tony, it was all based on those personalities and how they fit together. And you're right. You do need that balance. You know, Kelvin Sampson, I'm sure, has some guys on his staff that can deflate the room a little bit when things get a little too wound up or whatever it may be, or the other way around, you know? So, I really agree with you there. The last thing I've got, Tony, and it is part of the process, but I think it's ironic. We've gone through this whole thing and we haven't talked about the thing that, you know, even a pen and a napkin is guilty of at times. And that is your X's and O's knowledge. You know, you do need to have some X's and O's knowledge. Not everybody's going to know the game as well as others. Just because you know the game really, really well doesn't mean that you are a great coach. It means you know the game really, really well, really, really well, but can you communicate it? Do you have all of these other attributes that we have talked about here that is going to make you an effective assistant coach here? But you do have to have that. And you, they talk about in the NBA when they're drafting guys. Now you have your guys, you have your Wembanyamas, you had your LeBrons, they're just all around studs, you know? But when you're an assistant coach, where can you start at with your X's and O's, where you have an area of expertise? Hey, you know what? I'm really good at sets, or I'm really good at defense, or I'm really good at pressing defense, or whatever it may be. I'm really good with fundamental skill work. What is your tangible expertise, the one skill that you are really, really good at that's going to make you marketable? Obviously, if you're looking to get into collegiate ranks, if you can recruit kids, that's a tangible thing that obviously is extremely important at that level. So, you know, the X's and O's are obviously part of the gig as well, but, you know, I think we're both in agreement that all these other things that we've talked about, because we're talking about X's and O's last, it's not as important as what people sometimes believe it is.
Yeah. I think you can learn the game, you know, as far as it goes, but like you said, What is your area of expertise? And are you a student of the game? Are you a lifelong learner? And if those answers are yes, then yeah, that door opens a little bit wider, but you definitely need people in there that have something that they bring to the table, so to speak. And you can help teach your system. But as far as like, you know, those that post player shooting or defense or whatever, do they have an expertise? What do they rest on? What does their hat rest on? And so, yeah, I think the level of knowledge is important, but you know, you've got to be able to find people who have a passion for it and want to teach the game. I think that's something that's very important as well, is they love the game. They want to teach the game. And you can just see that enthusiasm that they have with the game.
Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy. The first annual Varsity Preparation Academy is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done. And we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Well, Tony, you know who always has enthusiasm and is ready to teach everybody everything that they know.
You're up.
Tony, I think I've got a good one here. I think it's a good one. I think it's a fair one here this week for you. Are you ready, sir, for a little trivia?
Right.
All right. I know we're going to talk about it here very shortly. We're going to talk about March Madness. Simple question, my friend. What NCAA Men's Division I's basketball program has the most appearances in the NCAA tournament without a Final Four appearance? Give you a hint. West of the Mississippi.
West of the Mississippi. Iowa State.
That's a good guess, but that is incorrect.
Let's go with South Dakota State.
Not as good a guess. But it is west of the Mississippi. I'll give you another hint. West of the Rockies.
New Mexico.
Used to be in the same conference as New Mexico. So you got close at the end there, my friend. Okay. Brigham Young University.
Oh, I had heard the other day, you know, what Danny Ainge it had been since him that they had made, I want to say the Elite Eight back in like 81 or something like that.
Yeah, that's when he went on that like wild, crazy play with like kind of his Tyus Edney, you know, where he hit the shot against Notre Dame. So, yes, that is the farthest they've ever been is the Elite Eight. 31 appearances for the Cougars without a Final Four. The top five. BYU with 31, Xavier with 29 appearances, Missouri with 28 appearances, after today, Tennessee with 27, and then, I didn't realize this, Creighton is fifth on that list, 25 NCAA tournament appearances, but no Final Fours. So...
they got a nice piece out of the transfer portal that Owen Freeman, I think, will do a really nice job for the Blue Jays.
Yes, yes.
Not promising a Final Four with him.
No, no, no. But when the numbers floating around, Tony, when Mr. Freeman signed his NIL, I'm sure his mom and dad looked over his shoulder and said,
"How about that?"
That's it. There we go. So,
good.
Thank you, sir. Let's talk a little. Should we stay in college basketball, Tony? Okay. We are taping this. It is Sunday night, about 9 o'clock. So the men's Final Four is settled. Let's go there first, Tony. It's pretty chalky in my mouth here.
Yeah.
Really chalky. Very surprising. You know, you always anticipate some upsets, but boy, the committee got it right.
Yeah, they did. You know, there might have been some other seeds that you could argue with a little bit, but those four number ones, they did a nice job with.
Yep. So Florida and Auburn in one semifinal, and then Houston and Duke in the other. Who do you have, my friend?
Back when this thing came out and I was doing the bracket, I went with Florida. I'm going to stick with Florida because I'm stubborn. but man, it's hard to pick against Duke. They took my tie to town last night.
Yes, they did. I was really, really excited to watch that game. Now, I did tell Mrs. Plum, and if you want me to go grab her, she can verify this statement. I did say I think Duke is going to win because I think they're going to defend better than your Crimson Tide, and that's kind of what happened. And Alabama, I mean, it's hard to shoot that well two games in a row as well. I mean, I get it, you know, but I thought it would be more like a, I thought it would be more like a 95-87 type of game. I had no way. I never thought that they would hold them to 65. I never thought it would be like that. So,
Coach Shire in their game.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a really, really good job. The flag kid at, Duke, I think he's got a future. I had forgotten today. I was listening to a podcast while I was, at Target. Yeah, real exciting stuff here in Omaha. I had forgotten that Cooper Flagg reclassified. He's only supposed to be a senior. He's supposed to be a high school senior. That is crazy. And he's probably the best player in the country as a kid who's supposed to be a high school senior. You know, he had a great game against who'd they play? Arizona. They played Arizona, and he was just unbelievable. Didn't play as well against Alabama, but Duke is really, really complete. You know, Houston is just tough. I think it should be one heck of a Final Four next weekend in San Antonio. But I would have to pick Duke, Tony. I had said all along, I didn't fill out a bracket. I normally don't. I just like watching the games to watch them. But I you know, when my students have asked, I said, I think Duke is the best team. Now, does that mean they're going to win it? No, but I think they're the best team. If you force me to pick somebody, that's who I would have picked.
Yeah. You know, I have a kid in my class who likes Duke a lot, and so I'll get a lot of grief from him because of my Alabama love of my home state. But yeah, Duke is, if they play like they did against Alabama, I don't see anybody beating them.
Yeah, yeah. Who do you think's gonna? You think Florida is gonna be in the other final
or
the
other finalist? I think Florida will be there. Florida Duke should be a heck of a game. You know, I thought Florida has like a cat that has nine lives, because I thought they got lucky to escape against Connecticut, and then I'm watching the Texas Tech game, and they're down, and you know they foul. You know, you're like, what are you doing? Texas Tech missed from the free throw. Okay. And they come down, hit a three, foul again. And like, what are you doing? Miss free throw, come down and hit a three. And the guy is dribbling in on the, you know, off the bounce, attacking the rim, gets kind of turned away, starts to back dribble, you know, pull back dribble, dribbles about behind the 3-point line. Nobody picks him up. And he knocks that one down. You're just like, oh boy.
Yeah.
The cardiac Gators.
Yeah. Yeah. And you usually have one game like that along the way. You know, you win a game that maybe you were supposed to lose. And, you know, unless you're like, you know, Hurley's run the last couple of years or something like that, you know, you got to find a way to win a game ugly usually along the way. And that's what Florida did there against Texas Tech. So I do like Florida as well. I don't know how many times did they play Auburn this year? We got
twice.
How they was it split? Did somebody sweep? Do you know? I guess.
Well, let me see if I can find that real quick.
Yeah, let me see. We should have thought of this beforehand, folks. While Tony's doing that, I'll start talking about the women's bracket a little bit here. We have two teams in the Final Four. We've got South Carolina and UCLA. UCLA making its first appearance. South Carolina making its fifth appearance. UCLA kind of tried to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory this afternoon against LSU, kind of an undersized LSU going against Lauren Betts. But the Bruins pull it out. I really thought Duke was going to knock off South Carolina at one point there. They were up four going into the fourth quarter, and then kind of there's just their championship bravado showed there. So we have two of those four in, and then of course we have the other two games here that we're going to have tomorrow night, which will be Texas and TCU, and then USC and UConn. So Tony, before we dive into that, what'd you find there on Florida and Auburn?
No, Florida won the last one. I'm trying to see what the one was before that. Sorry.
That's all right.
This technology thing.
Yeah. Do I have to play the song?
Let's play it again. Yeah. Or the Jeopardy theme music, one of the two.
So
maybe played the one time. I cannot find the second one, but it's 1981, February 8th. The Gators knocked off the Auburn Tigers, I think, snapped their 14-game winning streak.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So thoughts on the women's tournament, buddy?
I look at it like this. I really like the way UConn's playing. Beckers just has that look in her eye that it's not going to lose. And obviously she put up a career high in the last one with 40. And I just think that South Carolina is playing a very dangerous game right now, where they're escaping against teams that they're, in my opinion, double-digit points better than. And I just think that UConn is on a mission, and I see UConn cutting down the net.
Yeah, I think you're correct, my friend. I just think they are, you know, AZ Fudd is playing well. And one of the things, and we're kind of lucky, not kind of lucky, we are lucky here with Creighton in town, and Creighton's in the Big East with UConn. So we can go down and watch them play. And I've seen UConn play a couple of times down here. Their intensity on defense, it really gets undersold how hard Gino gets his kids to play on defense. I think they've got really, really active hands. And I agree with you. I think that Paige Beckers, this is kind of like the, oh, hey, remember me type of thing. Before this Caitlin Clark gal, I was kind of the talk of the town. And then I got hurt and a couple of things happened, and Caitlin and rightfully so stepped in and took that mantle from Paige. But she is just playing at a completely different level than everybody else. I think Texas and a South Carolina can kind of like physically match up, but I just don't think they have, I don't think that any of the other three teams have the skill level. So is it going to be the physicality of a UCLA, let's say a Texas or a South Carolina? Are they going to be able to match up against the overall skill with also great defense from Connecticut? And I think UConn would probably be the favorite there in my eyes, Tony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just really good on the defensive end like the other teams, like you mentioned, but I just think they're a little bit more skilled.
Yep.
And Gino doesn't do a bad job directing that traffic.
No, he's won a couple of things here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Tony, I think you and I are going to eat well off the platter of some folks here this last couple of weeks here.
Always, we have the meats.
Boy, there has been, and it is the season, but we've got a lot of stuff here. Ben McCollum going to Iowa, and then Eric Henderson leaves South Dakota State to replace Ben McCollum at Drake. We have Richard Pitino leaving New Mexico to go to Xavier. Nico Medved goes to Minnesota, and then his assistant, another Iowa connection, Ali Farukmanesh. Sorry, Kansas fans. He takes over at Colorado State. We've got Josh Pastner going to Nevada, Las Vegas, probably the quote-unquote biggest job filled, which was official. I had a question mark on this yesterday, but it became official this afternoon that Kevin Willard is going to leave Maryland and go to Villanova. And then on the women's side, Robin Pinchton, who had resigned at Missouri, took the job at Wisconsin, and she leaves the SEC to go to the Big Ten. So a lot of movement, Tony. What moves do, what are some of the in this shuffle here of this week, which ones are you really, really excited about?
You know, there's a lot of them. They're just the right fit. You know, I think McCollum at Iowa is a great fit. Henderson at Drake is a great fit. He's a Maoka Valley grad, you know, a couple hours away from Des Moines, but I think he's a great fit at Drake. Nico Medved going to Minnesota, again, I just think it's a great fit. And so there are a lot of those that just seem like the right fit. I scratched my head with the Pastor one a little bit, but you know, who knows, that may end up being a good job there as well for him. But those three that I mentioned first, I think those three just the right fit.
Yeah. I like that. Colorado State stayed in-house. And South Dakota State did that as well. They promoted their lead assistant to replace Henderson. And I apologize, his name escapes me. Yeah, there we go. He was at Kirkwood.
Played at Iowa State, also played at Kirkwood.
Yep.
Petey will do a good job there.
Yeah. Farouk Manesh, at Colorado State, I know, you know, people wanted to, they've got a guy that's probably going to get drafted in the NBA draft. A good move there. I really think Kevin Willard is going to do a good job at Villanova. I think he's got some Jay Wright vibes to him. Obviously, he's an outstanding recruiter. Maryland is their athletic department is their financials from the rumors that are floating around, not in the greatest place. And, you know, Villanova is really, really going to support their basketball program financially. And Kevin Lillard had that team. I mean, I think they lost 3 or 4 buzzer beaters this year. They got the buzzer beater against Colorado State and then got their doors blown off in the Sweet 16. But he got the Queen kid there. He just had, you know, I think he's a really good recruiter. I think this is a really, really good hire for Villanova, Tony. And I think he's going to do a really, really good job there.
The only thing I didn't like was how he handled the end at Maryland.
Yeah.
You know, you basically leak that your AD is going to leave, and then you kind of air your dirty laundry that they wouldn't let you stay another day in New York City to celebrate Christmas. But, you know, just wasn't handled maybe classy or the right way at the end, in my opinion. And again, my opinion doesn't amount to jack squat, but just wasn't handled. But as far as a basketball coach, he's about as good as there is out there.
Well, I think these jobs get messier and messier. I mean, we have more and more coaches that are, it used to be an unspoken secret that, okay, yeah, we might be talking to Tony Viss in the tournament, but it never goes public. And now there's more and more leaks. And now coaches are basically, you know, we saw this a couple weekends ago with Will Wade, basically told us, yeah, I'm going to North Carolina State. So let's just have some fun here, you know? And again, not to be the old man yelling at the clouds, but it's a different world. It's a different world, and I personally have a little bit of a difficult time with that. I just don't care for it personally. But it's the way that the game is played now, I guess. And maybe the old man needs to quit yelling at the clouds and just jump on board, I guess. So, yeah, what's the fallout been in Eastern Iowa over the McCollum hiring? Let's go home on that one, buddy.
I think everybody's excited about it. You know, I know some are worried about pace of play or whatever the case may be, but, you know, Ben, if you go through and take a look at his teams at Northwest Missouri State, he adjusts the pace of play to the what he has talent-wise to be able to do it. I mean, they're playing Big 12 and SEC schools in the tournament. You know, they're not playing other mid-majors. And so they had to maximize possession. And it just fit what they did. And it'll be interesting to see what he builds in Iowa City. I think it was the right hire. It seems to have energized the fan base a little bit, which, let's be honest, it's one of those things where if you get the fan base energized and they put more money in the NIL fund, that's a win-win.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of a win-win, when you hire good coaches, you have a good coaching staff and your program is set up to be in a good place. Tony, anything to bring us home on here for episode number 125 and assembling a coaching staff?
Diversity. I think that's the big thing. Not everybody to cut the same from an X and O style, personality trait, whatever, just diversity.
Yeah. Yeah. If possible, you want to bring in a balanced staff. Don Meyer used to say, if you've got 3 assistant coaches, have an assistant coach that's older than you, have an assistant coach that's about your same age and speaks your language and can relate to your point of view, and then have a young assistant coach who's going to bring energy and get excited and understand the changes that's going on, like you talked about with the technology and different things like that. And if you can bring in that balanced type of coaching staff, I think you're going to be in a really, really good place. So Episode 125, great stuff with Tony. Tony, again, thank you. I know I was joking about it earlier, but I know it's Rita's birthday. Tell Rita thank you very, very much for letting you to talk on the phone with your friend for an hour and 15 minutes here tonight. It's appreciated. So, you know, I'll get her some curly fries coupons or something like that here. We'll get her taken care of. So, yeah, yes, it is. No, we got it again. A lot of great stuff here. Coaches Clinic is a week from this coming Saturday. So, coaches, you got to get your registrations in. We're starting to fill up here. So, get your stuff in. You can Venmo me. You can email me. However, you want to do that. You know, we got a great lineup. We've always had a great lineup, but this year we've got another great one. You know, Raz Vanderloo, Jamie Smith. Andy King here. Weekday Wade Coulter. We just got a lot of really, really good coaches coming in to talk, and it's a great way. You know, by this point, everybody's going to be off for about a month or so. It's a great way to kind of get back into the swing of things for your upcoming season. So I really encourage you to come out on April the 12th here in Omaha. So for Tony Devis, hope you've enjoyed episode 125 of the coaching staff. Again, I want to thank also Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All American Used Cars and Trucks. They are the best. We appreciate it. And on that note, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.